Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio today, Sean Parnell. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm good to be here.
So I am aware, because we've had other people come into the studio, and by other people, I mean Talis Kohlberg. You know Talis.
I do. Yeah. Served with him. Yes. You bet.
What's your experience with Talis? How would you characterize him, or how do you want to put this?
You know, my experience with Talis has been extraordinary. I got to serve as lieutenant governor while he was attorney general. And indeed, if you remember, Governor Palin named him as the replacement lieutenant governor should anything happen to the lieutenant governor.
Oh, that's right.
So if the lieutenant governor got sick or got, you know, incapacitated or died in office, mm-hmm. Talis was in line to become the lieutenant governor.
Right.
And that was done right at the start of Governor Palin's first term. And so I can still remember the first cabinet meeting she held at the governor's house in Juneau. Big, long dining room table, all the whole cabinet sitting around it. The governor's at one end. I'm at the other end, this lieutenant governor, and I'm right by a fireplace that is just roaring with fire and huge fire going in the fireplace. And Talis is sitting up at the end close to Governor Palin, when all of a sudden there's this big boom and the logs in the fireplace just fling up against the sides of the fireplace. It's like a rifle shot has occurred in the room, and there's just complete silence as everybody jumped except for Talis. He leans forward, you know, he looks down the table at me and he says, "You okay, Lieutenant Governor?" So that was the start of a brilliant friendship, or wonderful friendship. And every time I appeared for a speaking engagement in Palmer, like at the Palmer Rotary,
right,
he would have delivered, if he couldn't be there, he would have delivered a dozen donuts. And he would say, "This is for your heart, Lieutenant Governor." I was on an Alaska Airlines flight once, and this flight attendant shows up in coach with a first class dish of shrimp and this melted butter. And she says, "This is from Talis Kohlberg. He's back in row 30, you know?" And here he is trying to kill off the lieutenant governor figuratively, you know, so that he could become lieutenant governor. That's my story on Talis Kohlberg, but I enjoy him as a person. He's got a great sense of humor, a love for the Valley, and just a wonderful man to be with. So.
Okay. And you both survived.
We both survived. Yes. And we're back in the Valley.
All right. Thank you. And Talis was an interesting figure before he went to Juneau. And of course, he was sort of born and bred and lived here in the Valley for a long, long time. He is back in the Valley after serving outside. And he has talked a lot about what the Matsu Valley means to him, et cetera. Now, you have lived and worked in other parts of the state, obviously, long career, and you have chosen to be here in the Matsu Valley, joining Talis and others. And I'm curious about, and I think listeners might be curious about, just what brought you to the Valley?
Great question. And as I think about this, let me provide some context as well. Sandy, my wife of almost 29 years now, we raised our kids and lived in Anchorage for decades, and then obviously served the people of this state as governor and first lady in Juneau the last 5.5, 6 years prior to 2014, the end of 2014. And during that time, we spent a lot of time in the Valley. We spent a lot of time with residents of Wasilla, Palmer, you know, throughout the Valley, and got a chance to just experience the people and the life here on a periodic basis. And for the last 2 years of my term as governor, we consistently talked about, gee, wouldn't it be nice to spend even more time in the Valley, the quality of life, the access to the outdoors, the lack of density, you know, all of those things that we enjoy as Valley residents that speak to the quality of life here and certainly the people, that's what was the spark for us wanting to move to the Valley. And so in October of 2015, we actually physically made the move from Anchorage to the Valley.
Okay.
And I set up my law practice here in Palmer, and working to just be the Valley lawyer for Valley businesses, and also have a consulting practice with clients with a partner that is more statewide in its focus. But we can talk about that as it relates to the Matanuska Valley as well. That's in short, it's that quality of life and the opportunity we see here with the communities and community of the Valley that really drew us here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's interesting, because the Valley is very often described as a place where, one, it's near to Anchorage. It's a short distance away. Arguably, there are some advantages to buying homes here. The price seems to be a little less than in Anchorage and all the rest of it. But what we understand, and certainly many people have been into the studio and talking about, something less definable, and that is kind of a quality of life. Hmm. Palmer in particular, the Valley in general, is a recognizable place that seems to allow for a lookout at the world without being swept up in perhaps traffic, et cetera, although we certainly have some traffic at that time. So,
but you can, the Valley has a true community. And,
exactly.
And we love being able to participate in that, regardless of the function, whether it's one of the sports teams or one of the nonprofits, the chambers of commerce. I mean, being able to attend those dinners, auctions, support the fabric of the community together, it has a greater sense of community than many areas of the state. And that lends itself to the quality of life that Sandy and I really want to experience. And that speaks to the community that we want to be a part of, which is why we're here.
Okay. Well, one of the other, I suppose, observations that a person could make is that I have seen you. I mean, I have seen you at the Alaska State Fair when you were governor. I have seen other individuals who have served in arguably higher offices in the state, and people are visible, meaning if you're at the airport or wherever, you can come up and say hello and the rest of it.
That's the beauty of Alaska. You know, our elected officials are our neighbors, and they're in the stores with us. And you do have that. You have permission to tug them on the elbow and say, "Hey, good job," or "Hey, got this issue I want to talk to you about." And sure. And you stop and patiently listen and work to solve those issues.
And not as likely to happen in the more populated states. I'm thinking of California, New York, Texas.
You can't get within a quarter mile of your governor or senator in those states. Yeah.
Well, that leads to another question that sparked my interest as I've gotten older.
Me too.
And you too. We've done this. And, and I think listeners can experience that, relate to that. We tend to look out and say, okay, you have very often early in a career a goal, whatever it might be, the next step up or whatever, you became governor. I have served in some positions, others have as well. And then that time passes by. You leave. You move on to other things. The really interesting question that a number of presidents of the United States, presidents of universities have tried to address is, what was your feeling and sense when you went from a job that arguably had a lot of people pulling at your elbow because they really... There was all kinds of apparently complex questions, answers, and decisions that you had to make, to something where perhaps, I'm going to guess, you have a little more control of your time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I used to joke that as governor, it's almost like being a doctor in the sense that you don't go from exam room to exam room, but you go from conference room to meeting, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And you have to really physically force yourself and force time into your schedule just to think about the direction that you want to go and that you want to lead in. And you're right. Once you step out of that position back into, I call it stepping up into private life and stepping up as citizen again, you really do have a sense that our time is our own. Now, how then shall we spend it? And rather than being pulled in hundreds of different directions, and even in that context, even as governor, you're pulled in hundreds of directions. But in my case, you know, you set out very specific goals and you keep your eye on, you know, at most five things, and you've got great people around you who can watch over the other 1,050 things or 10,000 things. You go back to private life, in my case, as, you know, a Valley business owner and Sandy's too. And we start to then think about, okay, where do we want to make an impact for the future? We have our first grandson, you know, mm-hmm. he's a year and a half sure. old now, just about. I think about the young people coming up who will be our leaders of tomorrow. And I look over my shoulder and say, you know, I've been honored to have some great experiences serving the people of Alaska. I want to make sure that the next generation is ready to do that too. And how can I be an influence in that? Sandy and I are still both very active in the anti-trafficking efforts, anti-domestic violence efforts, still contributing in those arenas. You know, those passions don't go away when you leave office, but you do get to be more choosy with how you spend your time. So you're speaking to the seasons of life that
sure.
Different season now.
Okay. Well, another person who has chosen to spend a lot of time in the Valley, who is associated with Anchorage, is of course former Mayor Rick Maystrom, and he's been in a couple of times here, both times discussing the two books he's recently done, dealing with his work in a particular area of diabetes. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious whether there's a book in your future.
I have been a voracious reader and across my life, and I have had a secret desire to write a book. I've done a lot of writing in my life, both in the legal profession as well as in political life. Many of my speeches, were largely my hand, my creation,
right.
With the help of some really good people as well. And so I can't answer that question with a definite yes, but it's on my list of yes, I would love to do that.
Okay.
I have to tell you, I love works of nonfiction, biographies and history. Those are the kind of the genres that I tend towards. So you probably won't be seeing a murder mystery out of me, but certainly something in the historical biographical arena.
So this is the kind of question we typically throw out. What have you been reading recently?
I'm one of those people who actually has several books going at once. And so
I understand.
you feel that?
Oh,
so
yes.
So if you were to look at my nightstand right now, you would see the last thick biography of Winston Churchill, uh-huh. By William Manchester and his co-writer after he passed, whose name escapes me right now.
Okay.
You'd see Peggy Noonan's columns, the book of columns that were just published.
Right.
I'm doing some theological reading. So I've read a book called Sacred Pathways and also one on interpreting the scriptures. So I kind of keep I have a varied reading list, but I usually keep about 4 to 5 books going at once and finish them across time.
I wonder what that says about people, because I've had that same feeling at times. I might get a book which attracts me, so I plunge into doing it.
Yeah.
But usually, as it is right now, I have 3 different books.
Yeah, so what are you reading right now?
Well, I'm sort of even-handed in terms of fiction and nonfiction. The Accidental Superpower is one that I have found to be fascinating because it takes a very umbrella-like look at the world. And the author is a a guy that looks at geopolitics, if you will, and the role that geography and demography has played. Mm. And in particular, and that's worldwide, but also it's provocative in the sense of looking at a population, whether it's the state of Alaska or the United States, and doing the kind of thing that says, okay, depending upon the profile of your population, we have some significant things happening here. And we know that it's popped up with countries in Europe or Japan. Hmm. And say there's you sort of want a balanced kind of demography. And if somehow that's changed a bit, that has a tremendous impact in it on what's coming up next.
So does the book touch on national security issues, or is it pretty much on the economic? Yeah.
Well, yes. And I have been, in fact, that's one of the books that I have recommended to a number of people. And in particular, I've asked for people's response when they take a look at it, just to check and say, you know, I found this to be really fascinating. The major other theme is that the United States as a country was extraordinarily blessed with a set of characteristics that are literally not found anywhere else in the world. And if we talk about early national security, mm-hmm. the fact of what you know as oceans, et cetera. Yeah,
the big moat.
And also that as compared to almost anywhere else, we have more rivers that flow in the right direction.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Well, that's when you begin thinking of it and looking at it, the transportation in the early days by river system could cover a considerable part of the United States. Hmm. And then the comparisons are made to Canada, for example, which even though it seems to sit right above us, does not have the same east-west ease of travel.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
If you've traveled, then you understand that.
You bet.
So it takes a look at how this has led to our development. We would have had to be really, really dumb not to have made something of the United States.
Well, thankfully, our forebears did.
That's the kind of thing. And then... So that's one book that has captured my attention. One of the things that I'm interested in is you were a practicing lawyer. Then you went on to do a variety of things.
Yeah.
That wasn't lawyerly so much.
Oh, actually, if you think about it, it really was. It was law at the front end where you get to create legislation instead of fight over it at the back end, right?
Right. Exactly. It's another aspect. Yeah. I like that. Another aspect of the law. But now you've returned to the back end.
You said that. I didn't. I should. No. Well, maybe I did.
I'm just following the trail.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So follow the breadcrumbs.
But
yeah.
The question I really have is okay. Mm. So what about what's happened in the in between times? Because we have a lot of technology. We've had a lot of things happen. Is law pretty much as you remembered it in this aspect of it?
Oh, absolutely. But remember, too, that the Department of Law is the largest law firm in the state. And so I was constantly interacting with the Attorney General and the Department of Law, whether it had to do with negotiating, you know, a Point Thompson resolution or other matters of legal significance to the state. So never really left the practice, although I did leave the active personal practice of law. So I have to say, though, that being a part of, in my case here in the Valley, being a part of being able to help a kind of a mom and pop LLC, you know, a small business here in the Valley, whether it's establishing their company, whether it's making sure that they're doing their documents right, whether they need help with a contract that they're trying to negotiate with somebody. I like being a part of helping them create something for their business, create that opportunity. I tend to, there are lots of lawyers in the Valley who are good at and want to do work, you know, in criminal defense and DUI work and the family, the divorce work. You know, there are some very competent people in those areas. Those are not my areas. I really want to be the Valley lawyer for Valley businesses. And so the work and the clients I have now tend to be those Valley businesses or people in real estate deals, you know, owners of land, that sort of thing. So those, anything that's contract oriented, that's what I tend to do. On the other side of the business coin, I have a company called Navigate North Consultants, and that's the company with my partner, John Moeller. That's the company that I brought here to try to work with Valley residents on creating more economic opportunity here. So think about the need for senior housing and the need. So I'm 53 years old, and you know, I've got aging parents. I'm aging, for Pete's sake, but my parents both are still alive. They live out of state now, but we're being confronted with housing issues. And how do you keep a couple together in those senior years when one is perhaps has more physical needs, healthcare sure. needs than the other? And the way you do it is you create a community where husband and wife can live together, man and woman can live together and age together. You buy in, for example, into a senior housing, you buy a home with other seniors and you live together, you eat together, you have your own, say you have your own 1500 to 2200 square foot home, but then one of you has a stroke and you're physically limited. Mm-hmm. So you want to move to a one bedroom apartment where you don't have to take care of things as much. You move together to a one bedroom apartment on the same grounds. You still go to the dining hall for one or two meals sure. a day with your friends. And then let's say that, we've been there for 10 years. Sandy and I have been there for 10 or 12 years. And I have a stroke that really does debilitate me, puts me in bed. I mm-hmm. need 24/7 care. Maybe I need skilled nursing care. Well, if you think about what's being built right by the Matsu Regional Hospital or being developed right now, the skilled nursing center, this is kind of a vision for something larger than just the skilled nursing center there. There could be an entire community built mm-hmm. around that. And we have a college in the Matsu that could actually feed professionals, CNAs, maybe even RNs one day into those settings. And mom and dad, Sean and Sandy, we can age in place with our friends and with our family members without having to be separated. That's one economic opportunity here. I mean, certainly we can talk more about the port, about the rail spur. Those are also significant opportunities that are now going to require private sector investment because the public sector investment isn't there. Mm-hmm. It isn't going to be there for some years. But I think the Matsu is a place where families, men and women, can just thrive in the future, notwithstanding the significant fiscal situation our state faces.
Okay. Nice. Good. I follow that. And it... You're talking about things that have concerned a variety of organizations, whether yeah. it's the Valley Health Foundation or hospital or senior groups, Matsu Senior Services, and so on. So this is, I think you're talking about something that is beginning to appear as more than just an idea.
Yes.
I think that's probably the...
Yeah, and there are many here who share that. I mean, I'm not the first one to think of it, but I am willing to work with others, whether it's the borough, whether it's the Health Foundation, other community entities, because I want to bring to bear the skills and qualities I have with those of that, you know, other members of the Valley possess and make this happen. So.
Sure. Sure. Well, I want to thank you. We've somehow
that went very fast. Thank you.
25 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'd like you to take an opportunity, if you will, to add a last comment before we finish in.
Oh, well, Mike, I appreciate the chance to be here. Most of all, Sandy and I appreciate being fairly new Valley residents. We've been warmly received and welcomed into the community. I look forward to being here for years to come and to working together to not only build this community, but also just to leave it a much better place than we even found it.
Okay. Well, thank you again.
All right.
Sean
Thanks.
Parnell.